Unstoppable.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Unstoppable podcast series. I am so excited about our guest today. We have recording country artist and rapper Smo. How are you doing today, sir?
Better than I ever imagined I would be.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for taking time out of your day. And you're already doing some awesome things today, which we'll get into it in a little bit. But I'm going to let you do your own introduction. I love my guests doing their own introduction because you're going to tell more about yourself than I could ever could. So the floor is yours, Mr. Smo.
Well, for those who don't know me, my real name is John Smith. Oh, you need in there? Sorry. We're running a business. This is my wife, Sarah Beth.
I've been speaking to her. She's awesome.
We're actually, and just to give everybody the lead in, we're actually at our, in our hometown, we have a good friend that has a food trailer that she does smoothies, and we're introducing our plant-based menu in her food truck this week. So
awesome.
All organic, all homemade, all our recipes. And it's the first time that we've ever food prepped for sale, you know? So yeah. this morning has been very educational so far. for those who don't know me, my real name is John Smith. I was born in San Diego, California, because that's where my dad was stationed in the Navy. Not long after I was born, my dad retired from the Navy, and he moved me and my mother and him. We moved back here to their hometown, Bedford County, Tennessee, which is where I've been for the remainder of my life. I came up very simple, you know, just normal family, had great parents. I had a older sibling that was a big influence, you know, on my life and my career, and my dad's music and his music kind of paved the way to what I listen to. It's funny because when I think about my past story, I really start to realize how much domesticated programming goes into creating a human. You know, we kind of all come out as a blank canvas, and then the people that you're around and the things that they kind of expose you to is what starts to make the skin on your body. You know what I'm saying? And then eventually you grow into that skin and you become this person that the people that you grew up around kind of programmed you to be. So I'm very much a product of that program. Raised in a small town, Tennessee, very small town, real cool family. My family's always been cool. I had the best dad. My dad passed away. It's been like 16 years now. It's been some time. I lost my dad to cancer. I still have my mother, though, and I take care of her. She's a firecracker. Anybody that's watched my TV show knows Mama Smo.
That's right.
And she's doing great. Like, she's loving life. So, you know, she's getting up in age, though, so it's a little tricky. But yeah, I grew up on my dad's music. I grew up on my brother's music. And then when I was old enough to own my own music, I had kind of a blend of both of those. My brother was into a lot of East Coast hip hop breakdancing music. This was like in the early 80s. And then my dad was straight outlaw country. And, you know, pretty much just standard country is what he liked. And so I grew up under those two fellows. And then my mother, she's very Baptist church. So we had to go to church. You know, we went to church every Sunday and sang every Sunday in choir and stuff like that. So I was always around music. Like, my family was very musical as far as listening to it, but not really writing it or making it. Nobody in my whole family that I know of ever made music. Wow. Or was in the music business or ever did anything like that. But we all enjoyed music, and that rubbed off on me probably more than anything. And I grew up playing different instruments. I had a live drum set. I had a keyboard. I had a guitar. I had turntables. I had, you know, and then as I got older, you know, big stereos and all that stuff. So music's just always been like one of the cornerstones of my life. But right around the age of 14, here in this small town that I grew up in, I committed my first felony. I blew up a bunch of mailboxes.
Oh no.
Which is what 14-year-olds do.
That small town E's got to going, didn't it?
I blew up a bunch of mailboxes and I blew up a Pepsi machine.
Oh man.
And I got a lot of trouble for it, as I should. Mm-hmm. And I guess they thought that I was going to be like some Unabomber type person. So they put me with a counselor. So at 14, I'm going to like counseling. Real sweet lady, really cared about what my outcome was going to be. And she told me, no one had ever told me to write down anything, you know, like write down what you're feeling, write down what's on your mind. So my counselor is the one that kind of got me started on writing. And I started writing short stories, just stuff in my head. I started writing poetry around the sixth and seventh grade, when I was really had it for one of these girls here in Bedford County. I would write love poems and leave it on her desk, you know. And then those poems turned into lyrics. Mm-hmm. And that's how I became a songwriter. As I blew up a bunch of mailboxes, got in trouble, got forced to write, and then found out that I had a knack for it. Mm-hmm. And not only was I good at it, but it started to become very therapeutic.
That's
because
awesome.
I found the freedom to say whatever I wanted to say without having to say it to someone. You know what I'm saying? I could just write it down.
Right. Absolutely.
I think you girls call it a diary.
A diary. That's what we call it.
A diary. Yeah.
A diary. Yeah.
Boys call it unrecorded records.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. I have a bunch of songs in my diary.
I'm sure you do. So I got into writing. And I was in the band, in the middle school band. I played trumpet, and then I switched over to the drum line. I was in the drum line through high school, and about my sophomore year, I dropped out of the band and started to become like I guess what they would call it is a backwood hippie, mm-hmm. And just started to go down a different path. You know what I'm saying? Different music. I got really into like classic rock, Pink Floyd, The Doors, Zeppelin, all that good stuff, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I was wild. I was wild as anything in high school. So, but not long after I got out of high school and I realized that I wanted to try to make some music, a buddy of mine, he had like a drum machine and a guitar and a microphone, and he was playing the guitar, and I was like learning this drum machine, and I figured out how to make like this little simple beat, and I was like, oh, keep playing that part, and I'm gonna keep playing this. And I was like, oh, I think I just made my first like music.
Yeah.
So this was before computers. We had an 8-track tape recorder, not an 8-track player, but where you could record up to 8 tracks on a cassette tape. And I started recording music in my parents' basement on an 8-track recorder with my dad's aviation headphones. It was like a super thrown together deal with a Radio Shack microphone.
Oh my goodness.
This is like 98, you know.
Huh?
And cutting these, I had a few records. They were super stupid, like real terrible, but I was recording them and putting them on cassette tapes and going to parties and like, hey man, pop my tape in, you know what I'm saying? People are like, oh man, is this you? And I'm like, yeah, man. And I just like, I saw the impact that had. Like, people were like really impressed that I was able to, on my own, capture my music, right? So that evolved, of course. And then, you know, fast forward about a decade of learning how to produce my own music, write better lyrics, record my vocals, mix my music, master my music, put it on CD, do the artwork, shoot the video, do the promo, like everything, book the show, go to the show, set up the sound equipment, wow, do the show. Like I did every job, like shooting my own music video, you know, back before YouTube was even really a thing.
Right.
And I was doing that when I was like 10. I got a video from a VHS tape that my family has held on to for dear life of me when I was like 10. Aviation glasses, camouflage outfit that my dad had got me from like the army surplus store.
Yeah.
You know, just the dude that I am today.
Right.
But
right,
like at 10, yeah, singing DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, Parents Don't Understand. You know what I'm saying?
I love it.
And the Fat Boys. And so like I was filming that stuff. And when I come hang out with your husband, if you're there, I'll show you the video.
Oh yeah, for sure. Please do.
I show it to people all the time. I'm like, yo, this is me at 10. And I like, this is me at 46. I'm like the same dude. So I really got into like making music, you know what I'm saying? And like being an artist and then all, but also like being the label.
Yeah.
And being the manager and being the graphics designer, the videographer, the producer, the everything. Like I wore every one of my own hats. And I think that was the coolest thing about my journey is that being able to like self-taught a lot of this stuff. And, you know, like you're going to make mistakes,
yeah,
no matter what you do. You can mess up making a glass of water.
Absolutely.
You spill it all over the place. You know, take the first drink and it goes down your shirt, you know.
Yeah.
Like you can mess up doing anything. And I made a lot of mistakes. But the main thing I did is I learned from my mistakes. And then I applied those lessons to my next, you know, goal. So I wouldn't make the same mistake. And I think that's what people miss out on. It's like it's okay to make mistakes.
Yeah.
It's like you it's okay to do things wrong until you figure out how to do it right. Then it's not okay to do things wrong after that, right?
Exactly.
Like anything in life worth doing is worth doing poorly.
Yes.
Until you know how to do it.
I love
because
that.
that's how you figure out,
yes,
how to do things. You know what I'm saying? The first time you go to hammer a nail in, you're going to hit your thumb.
Yeah.
That's how you learn to hold a nail and swing a hammer, right? And you get good at it.
Yeah.
So anything worth doing is worth doing poorly until you learn how to do it right. That I live by that. And I think a lot of people need to give themselves the opportunity to do things poorly and to not be so hard on themselves. You know what I'm saying? Like life's gonna leave some knots on your head, especially if you got dreams. Like you could be a dreamless individual and life might take it pretty easy on you. You know what I'm saying? You can stay in the shadows, you can hang out on the bench and you can stay out of danger. But like, if you really are passionate about your goals and your dreams and you know that you have greatness inside of you, then like you're going to go after those things and life is going to whoop your butt left and right. For good reasons, right? Because anything worth having is also worth busting your butt for.
Absolutely.
And that's what I did with the music. I just worked hard. You know, I knew what I wanted. And I already knew I could do it on my own. So when it came time, when managers started calling, when labels started calling, I was a little better equipped to deal with what my expectations were from them rather than just being this excited artist with an opportunity that in the early 2000s, that's all anybody thought that they were supposed to do was get signed by a major label.
Right.
If I could just get signed by a major label, you know what I'm saying? All that's changed now, you know, like there's barely any major labels around and you don't need to get signed by a major label because you can do everything yourself now with the internet and the social media and all these platforms and opportunities. And like, you don't even have to burn CDs anymore. God, I remember I would record my music. I would sit down with 100 CDs, a spool of 100, and burn each one, print out a label that had my home phone number on it because I didn't have a cell phone at the time, And then I would go down to Second Avenue, Nashville, and stand on the corner and give my CDs away. Hey, man, check this out. I don't want to buy that. No, no, no. I'm not selling nothing. I want you to just listen. Wow. Just please give me the opportunity to hear what I have to do. And it had my email. It had my MySpace.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I was like early in the game, I knew how to like promote my stuff and get heard. But before I even stepped to Nashville, I did that here in my hometown. So I'm a firm believer in like, if you can't do for your hometown, then don't even step outside of that circle. Like
right.
you need to build a relationship with your community. You need to let them know who you are and the service that you provide, and then give them that service, and then they'll support you.
Yeah.
That's why this food truck is going to be popping all day today, is because I'm in my hometown trying to provide a healthy service for my community.
Absolutely.
That's a hard thing to argue with. It'd be different. You know, there's people out here selling methamphetamines in my community. We're not supporting them.
No.
We're trying to support a healthy living, positive energy, and being a better version of yourself tomorrow. That's kind of like our thing. So the journey to get to where I am now was a whole, like it, every step of the way is what got, is part of the blueprint that what got me where I am today. But when major labels and management came, of course, I was ecstatic at the time because we didn't have, like, there was no streaming. Streaming wasn't really a thing yet. Huh? I'm sorry. Apologize for everyone. What is it? I'm doing a podcast. So, yeah. The journey was a bumpy road, but it was rewarding without a doubt. And I learned even more when I got into the major labels, and you know, I learned a lot about the music industry, the music business, all the things that you really can't learn on your own as an independent artist because you're not in the throes of everything.
Right.
Publishing, masters, songwriting, and then once streaming came in, like streaming and like the ownership of your music. No, there is no real, or at least I didn't take a class that taught you these things. I just had to learn as I went, you know?
Yeah.
And then after the major label, then the TV show, you know, so it was like, and it was fast. All the stuff happened fast. It was like
2014, right? Is that when that came out?
2014. Yeah, 14.
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember that.
Yeah. So that was a big, you know, that was another big college course for me.
Yeah.
I'd never been on TV. Uh-huh. I filmed myself a lot, you know what I'm saying? And we had even shot our own episodic show and put it out on YouTube as if it was our TV show. And, but like 30 people, uh-huh. Like 30 crew members in your house, 4 or 5 cameras. Cast, oh, catering, yeah. Every day for 3 years of your life.
I would be, woo, yeah. That I would. Quite, I would yeah.
Quite the education, right? So, but priceless, yeah. Nonetheless. Regardless of what I had to go through, like none of my friends know what it's like to have to. Nobody I know, even in the industry, I don't know anybody that knows what it's like to have your own TV show.
Right.
You know, so it was an education that like not a lot of people get. And I love film. Like put me in front of a camera, I'm good to go. I'll get my lines the first time. You won't have to do a bunch of film. Like I know what to do. I'll improvise the whole thing and we'll keep it moving.
That's awesome.
So I was really good at TV. But this is where we'll bend into the unhealthy factor.
Uh-huh.
The most successful moments of my life when it comes to industry success,
right,
was my most unhappiest and unhealthiest time of my life.
Mm.
I weighed 390 pounds.
Yeah.
I was completely morbidly obese, super unhappy in a terrible relationship. The industry had me by the throat. You know, the labels They want delivery, 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 the TV show, delivery, 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 tour, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, every week, on, living on a tour bus, you know. All these things are great things, but like all of them at once will lead you to a heart attack or open heart surgery, which is what happened to me. So like, you know, of course the stress and the work and everything caught up to me. And I was on tour on the West Coast and in Canada, huge tour, biggest tour of my career. And I felt like there was someone parked a truck on my chest. I was like, I don't know what's going on, but something hurts right here. Mm-hmm. And I went to several different hospitals while I was on the road. Nobody could figure out what was wrong. And then my bus driver took me to the Mayo Clinic when we came out of Canada and into Minnesota. And he said, I'm taking you to the Mayo Clinic. I made you an appointment with a cardiologist. And I was like, what? And he's like, you're going. And he was a good friend of mine. Right. My bus driver became like my brother, because I mean, he called him my black Jesus.
Right.
And he was okay with that.
Yeah.
Because he saved my life. He took me to that hospital. They did one test on me and they said, you have blocked arteries. And I was like, okay, so what do we do? And they were like, well, you're going to have open heart surgery. And I was like, I got a show tomorrow. We ain't doing none of that. And they were like, no. You're going to die if you don't. And I was like, you know, what do you do? Right. So I had to cancel 2 months of a tour, which if anybody knows what goes into canceling a 2 month tour when you're in a $1 million bus and your band, your 7-piece band, I lost everything. Mm-hmm. I lost everything. I lost my opportunities. I lost a ton of money. I lost momentum. I lost the algorithm. I lost everything. You know, I lost my band. I can't pay these guys for 2 months to sit still. Right. They moved on, you know, and then I was stuck. I had to start over from scratch. And at the same time that I was going through my heart surgery, I was also going through a multi-million dollar lawsuit over some ex-manager who claimed that he still managed me. I was just like, what? But it took like 5 years to go through this lawsuit, like $100,000 in legal fees to beat it. And then at the same time, the woman that I was married to on the TV show, I had to divorce her because she was cuckoo ka-choo. I don't want to talk bad about nobody because everybody has their hard times, but like I got a divorce, right? And it was like, that was a, you know, $250,000 divorce. I don't even have kids with this girl. We don't even have any marital assets. And it still cost me like $250,000. I don't even know how, just because I am who I am. And it was an opportunity. Wow. So like I had to start with a clean plate.
You sure
broke,
did.
No band, no tour, no nothing, none of the stuff that I had just had, you know, but it was like one of the best things that ever happened for me, you know? And from there, that's when I started my healthy living, you know? And then that's when I stopped eating red meat and pork and fried food and soda.
Yeah.
And then I did that in full sobriety for the first time in my life since I was 12. I hadn't been sober since I was 12.
Wow, that's so awesome.
And I was 39 and sober for the first time, forced, you know. Of course, I told my surgeon, he said, I won't even do this surgery on you unless you quit drinking. Because I was drinking about a half gallon of Jim Beam Red Stag every night on stage. And didn't really realize that I was an alcoholic because it was just part of my gig, right? But apparently I was an alcoholic. So cold turkey sober, quit eating a lot of stuff that I used to eat. And I had some success. You know, I lost like 50 pounds pretty quick just from stopping eating fried foods and drinking soda. But stuck there, you know what I'm saying? And still not happy. And I needed to lose a lot more weight. I was like to like 270, 280 pounds. No, I was even more than that. I was like 320. And then I started to not feel as good again. And I knew I had to do something. And luckily my wife, we wasn't married at the time, or we were married at the time, but she had me watch this documentary called The Game Changer. Uh-huh. And she said, "Hey, I think you really need to watch this. It's geared towards men, you know." And I watched it, and it's like plant-based, you know, promoting that and showing the ups, the downs, the controversies and all that. And after I watched that documentary, shit, I ain't ate meat since. I haven't had milk since. I haven't had eggs since. I haven't had cheese. I mean, I went full vegan. I went plant-based.
Yeah.
And 3 days after I did it, I instantly felt different. I suffered from acid reflux. Uh-huh. in a way to where you had to take double the medication to maintain it, and then you dealt with it every day. So it was pretty much like being a prisoner to acid reflux.
Oh my God.
You know,
sounds like Travis. He's the same way. He's the same.
Three days after I quit eating the way that I used to eat,
yeah,
I stopped having acid reflux.
Oh my God.
3 days.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Six months, yeah, after going plant-based, I was off my medication, the acid reflux. A year after going plant-based, I was able to stop taking my blood pressure medication.
Wow.
Cholesterol medication. 2 years after being plant-based, I was off any medications. My doctor had cleared me from, he was like, you've basically fixed yourself. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. I was like, all right, cool. And then about a year ago, we got real serious on this. Like, I had lost about 100 pounds, yeah, maybe a little more, uh-huh, but I wanted to like drop some weight. I wanted to add some muscle and I wanted to be stronger. I wanted to be able to do things that I'd never done. And we went like whole food plant-based, uh-huh, which is not eating any processed foods. Yeah. And then I went gluten-free, which is you remove anything that's got wheat in it.
Yeah.
And then oil-free, which is one of the hardest things that I think anybody living in society could ever do.
Yeah.
But by going whole food, plant-based, gluten-free, oil-free, I was able to drop 70 pounds quick and with a lot of exercise. Like I went to the gym every day for 2 hours. I'd leave the gym and I'd go to the pool and I'd work out in the pool for an hour. And then I'd just leave from there and I'd dedicate my rest of my day to healthy eating and healthy choices. And from that, you know, I've gone from 390, where I started around right before my heart surgery, to 180.
That is,
and we're talking about, I wore a 5X shirt at one time. I wear a large now. I wore a size 48, 50 pants. Mm-hmm. Now I wear a size 29. My shorts are size small. I didn't wear clothes that fit me like this when I was in middle school. I weighed more in middle school than I do now.
Wow.
So I've always been fat. I struggled with my weight my whole life. And nobody ever really tried to get me to change it, right? I was just always the fat kid in the family. My parents, they didn't have a lot of expectations for my health.
Right.
You know, they didn't know no better.
Well, you're from most the South people, too, you know? Yeah.
It's a terrible excuse.
Yeah, it is. But think about people like chicken, 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 fried, fried, fried. It's like, holy crap, is on every table, every meal.
Let me tell you something. That you're from the South.
Yeah.
That was planted.
Oh yeah.
That was a domesticated term that was planted among us to keep us eating a terrible lifestyle.
Very true.
Because now everybody has the excuse. But is it because you're from the South? Because one of the towns in Indiana is the fattest town in America. So, you know, and then I just went to Maine not too long ago, and everybody up there was fat. And like everywhere I go now, everybody's overweight. And for the first time, I'm like a normal size. And I just look at everybody and I'm like, whoa. I go in the grocery store and I'm like, bro, you don't need six cases of Mountain Dew, my guy. Do you know how much sugar is in one of those? Have you seen what that much sugar looks like? Do you know what an ounce of white powder looks like? Because you're drinking an ounce of white powder. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. Now I've reprogrammed myself. My domestication, how I was raised, is out the door.
Right.
Because I'm smart enough to know that my parents just didn't know no better. They were doing what everybody else was doing. They were sold on convenience, man. Like, everybody was sold on convenience. You know, all this, the convenient fast food, this shit killed us as humans. Like, and you can go back to we've all heard it. And it's this one of the smartest things now that I've ever heard. You are what you eat.
That's very true. It is very, very true. I have that written down too. I wrote down what you said about the South, but I also have that written down on another page. You are what you eat. That is true.
You are what you eat.
I have a question real quick because I've started this kind of a gluten-free journey because some autoimmune disease in my family and stuff. And it really has helped when I stay that route. So I went into Sprouts. I don't know if it's a Murfreesboro. I don't know if there's one in Shepherd or not, but you know, it's a lot of organic, healthy based.
I shop there.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
What is somebody that's new to it? Like, I mean, obviously I want to ask you when we get to the podcast, how we can find what you're doing, what you and your wife are doing. But you know, I looked at my bill and I'm like, holy crap. And that's why a lot of people, some people will say, dang, it's expensive to eat healthy. What's your take on that? And how would you get people to kind of think differently on that?
So it's not expensive to eat healthy. Right. I just bought 4 watermelons for $10. I'm going to juice those watermelons and I'm going to drink them all week. Right. So you think about buying a soda or any packaged drink. You know, it's going to be like $3 now.
Right.
You're only going to get like 3 of those. With 4 watermelons, I'm going to get 16 32-ounce mason jars full of watermelon juice.
Wow. Yeah.
That's just an example. Here it is. And you can get this. I made this real easy for everybody because you can go on my website and you can get my shopping list. I've taken my shopping list receipt. And my wife has written it all, typed it all out. So you can go to the grocery store. You can even download the PDF version and use it as a checklist. So my wife made the shopping list accessible for everyone.
That's awesome.
And I remember going to the grocery store and spending $300 on groceries. When we go to the grocery store now, it's $125. But we also don't shop outside of the produce section.
Right. Right.
We only eat in the produce section. There is no, we don't go down other aisles at all. So that's the other thing. And it, like, it depends on what you're buying. You know, if you're still buying processed food, it's going to be high.
Yeah.
Because somebody had to process it. Someone had to package it. It had to get shipped here. It had to get all that stuff.
Right.
Produce, especially if you can find, like, if you're lucky enough to be in a place where they got like a farmer's market, you know, or if you can have a relationship with, I have a relationship with my produce manager at my Kroger in Murfreesboro. Uh-huh. His name's Chris.
Uh-huh.
I juice celery every day. I drink like a 32-ounce mason jar full of celery juice every day. It's life changing.
Yeah.
I go into Kroger every week and I buy a case of 30 celery bushels.
That's cool.
You know, for the whole week, me and my wife juice celery sometimes twice a day. Because we do intermittent fasting. Like we'll eat
right
6 o'clock at night and we won't eat again until the next day around 1 or 2.
Okay. I'm doing that right now. Mine's from like 12 to 6. Yeah. That's good. I'm working out. So I'm going to this site as soon as we get done this podcast and check
it out. Yeah. You go to my website and go to my social media. Blogs you got to social media.
Yeah.
We put all the information in our blogs.
great.
And like we did an e-zine that explains our journey. My wife has lost over 100 pounds. I've lost over 200. So like it's not, and we don't take anything.
Uh-huh.
Like we don't take any workout stuff. We don't take any fat burner stuff. We're not on a meal prep. Like we just eat plants.
Yeah.
It's easy. Like we eat plants. We don't eat gluten. We don't eat oil. And I mean, and if you can change just your diet, you'll see a huge difference. Now, I would suggest to anyone, change your diet first.
Right.
Don't even worry about exercising.
Mm-hmm.
Dial your diet in, because most of the time doing exercise and diet at the same time can be a little too much.
Yeah.
Dial in your diet first.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have that under control, then start out with some easy exercises. You don't have to go to the gym and blow yourself out.
Right.
Start at home. Do calisthenics. Do push-ups, sit-ups. Like, I went my whole life. Let me tell you this. I'm very proud of this.
Yeah.
I went my entire life never being able to do a pull-up. Not as a kid, not as a teenager, not as a man have I ever been able to do a pull-up. Until this year, when I turned 46, I did my very first pull-up.
Oh, my gosh. Good for you. I would be
following. Yeah. The following week, I did 3.
Look at you.
The week after that, I did 5. The week after that, I did 10.
Shoot.
Now I do 30 a day.
Wow.
You know, and I do 50 push-ups. I do 50 sit-ups. You know, I do calisthenics. I do a lot of stretches. I do a lot of resistance strap weight.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like resistance workout. All of these things you can achieve with nothing. Like, you know, it's super easy. You don't even have to have a gym. But I would suggest to anyone, dial in that diet first.
Mm-hmm.
Reprogram yourself and remember that you are what you eat. So only put good things in your body and only good things will come from you.
I love that. There's some things I've taken notes while you're talking. And one thing I want to say is that your grit and grind is just off the charts. I love that about you. And it sounds like you've got a power couple and your wife that's like that, and y'all hold each other accountable and y'all speak into each other's lives. And mm-hmm. I just think that's wonderful. The time that I've spoke to her through email so far, I think she's very professional, very on it. And you can tell she's a huge promoter of you. And I'm sure you are as her as well. But what I love about going back, and I'm not going to go back too far, but I just want to say, when you were talking about how you got started, even in the music industry, you did everything yourself. You said that you filmed the videos. I think so many people, and this goes back to what you're talking about with the music and the health and the eating right. So many people wait for this perfect little moment of light to come down to like, this is it. I've got to have this, and this in order before I start. And you don't. You just have to start. And you can't.
You just got to start.
Start. Yes.
Start right now. I don't care what your goal is. Whatever your goals and dreams are, you got to start right now. You got to stop talking about it. You got to start doing it.
Exactly.
People tell me all the time, I can't do what you did. I'm like, yes, you can.
You can. Yes, you
but
can.
But you have to start.
Exactly. I did a video when I left the gym the other day and I said, look, I haven't always been able to go to the gym. I had kids at home. I had a disabled child at home for a while. I still had to make, like you said, push-ups at home, set-ups at home.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it. You don't need a gym membership to be able to do what you're telling them to do right now. I mean, just start. And I just appreciate, I mean, like you have just been, you're such a genuine person. And obviously, you've met a lot of people throughout your time, but I remember the first time I met you, you were in Bell Buckle. I think it was at some type of the festival they had going on.
Probably at my store.
You were at the store. You're at your store and your mom was in there. And my 16-year-old, he was like young at the time, came in and your mama just loved his little blonde country hair. And she just raved over him. And I thought, what really nice people like that. You know, that was my first encounter with you guys. And I was like, I'm going to watch his show. And sure enough, I sat there and watched, you know, and followed your music and stuff, because you're just a genuine person and you can relate to people and you haven't let your fame and your accomplishments in life get to your head. You're all about giving back to your hometown and the people around you. And that says something about you, because there's not a lot of people like that these days.
Well, thank you. That means a lot to me, because it hasn't been easy, you know, and I struggle with everything.
Uh-huh.
Like I struggled with fame. Fame is a very devilish thing that no one can prepare a human being for.
I bet.
Because it's very customized. Like, no one gets the same fame. It's very cut to each individual. And you just have to understand that money isn't real. It's just a byproduct from success. Success is real. Fame is make-believe. None of us are, like, we're all famous, you know what I'm saying, in our own way. And you just have to, like, one of the main things I learned, especially when it comes to, like, the music industry is very competitive. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of negativity out here. You know, there's a lot of haters. And I had to learn, just like anybody else has to learn on anything, that don't be a hater. Like, right? Like, don't be a hater. If someone else is succeeding, celebrate their success.
Right.
If you celebrate everyone's success, the party never stops.
Like,
and
that's good.
I'm here for the party.
That's right.
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 I mean, life is what it is, but my life is a party.
That's right.
And as long as every day, if I surround myself with quality people who strive to succeed and I celebrate their successes, then the party's nonstop.
That's right.
You know, so I would just encourage people to try to be, it's hard. First of all, it's hard.
Yeah.
You got to know it's hard. Life is hard. Work is hard. Health is hard. Relationships are hard. It's hard. But with the right kind of discipline and the right kind of direction, you can do just about anything. So don't beat yourself up over things being hard, because it's hard for everyone, right?
That's right.
And I tell myself that every day. I'm like, yo, it's hard. It is hard. It's hard out here.
But
you know what? People are like, man, it's hard. It's hard to eat healthy. It's hard to not eat these things. And I'm like, bro, it's hard being fat.
Yeah.
It's harder to be fat than it is to eat a salad, right? It's harder to be fat than it is to say no to barbecue ribs. It's hard.
That's right.
Being fat's hard. So, and I, like I said, I'm trying to promote just what I've learned, because I know it's doable.
Right.
I know it's affordable. I know that it's accessible. Every grocery store has a produce section in it.
That's right.
It might not be as good as Sprouts. Mm-hmm. But when you, like, I have to go all the way to the Sprouts in Murfreesboro,
yes,
to get my figs and my dates.
Yes, I got some dates.
And I'll do that. I'll drive all the way over there.
Yeah.
Yo, they're bulk. We buy bulk. So we'll buy like 2.5 pounds of dates, 2.5 pounds of Turkish figs.
Uh-huh.
Fire. And that's my candy. Like, I used to eat candy, chocolate. I was addicted to chocolate.
Uh-huh.
Now I eat figs.
They are so good.
Hey.
Lunch break.
Who did?
Corey Bagwell.
I don't know who that is. Sorry. Well, I've got people that are up here to see
understand.
Me.
I get it. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I appreciate, you know, you coming on. But before we close out here real quick, because I know you're doing the food truck today with your wife. How can people find you? Obviously on social media, but go ahead and give everybody a plug how to find you and what we talked about today.
Yeah, so go to therealbigsmo.com. Mm-hmm. Just go to my website, and that's the only thing you need to go to, because there's a link on my website to where you can go to my Facebook, my Instagram, my YouTube, my Spotify, my everything.
Everything.
So just go to therealbigsmo.com. Make sure you go down to social media and you look at those blogs, and you'll find recipes and like how we got where we're at. Everything that we're serving today, except for the poppers, the recipes are on there. So just go to the website. It'll take you everywhere.
Absolutely. And the name of the food truck, if they want to check that out in Shevable with their local listeners, how can they find that?
Smoothieville.
Smoothieville. I love it. Love it. Well, we thank you. So we thank your wife for cutting out time out of y'all's day to do this. And we appreciate you being a part of this Unstoppable podcast. You both have been amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I look forward to coming and seeing you guys real soon.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm unstoppable, 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 unstoppable.